Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research and unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And on our show today, Adam, we'll be talking with Dr. Mark Gwynn, director of the UNC Family Medicine Center, about wellness at work. I know there's a new program, UNC Wellness at Work program, but there's a much broader question about how we can approach overall health and wellness in our workplace.
Exciting conversation, and I think a radical transformation of healthcare around the country where employers really are taking a lead. And so I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Dr. Gwynn.
I am too. But first, we have some research that matters. We're going to talk about music lowering anxiety in ICU patients.
Intensive care unit and music. I like that. And how about fighting asthma with ginger? Something I hadn't really heard about.
And if you have a hysterectomy, what does that do to your risk of heart disease?
And finally, we're going to have a conversation, Christy, about research about breastfeeding. Do people breastfeed more when they actually use formula? This could be a controversial topic. I know
it
you may
sure
have some
is.
Opinions.
Of course I will.
Well, let's dive right into our very first, then, research that matters about music in intensive care units for patients on respirators.
And so this is some research done at Ohio State University looking to see if the use of music, and particularly patient preferred music, if having that on makes a difference in their anxiety and their well-being while they're on one of those respirators with the tube down their throat breathing for them.
So very sick, critically ill patients, and perhaps they have to be on sedation with medication to help keep them very calm while they're so sick. And maybe this music could lower the amount of sedation or the anxiety that mm-hmm. you mentioned, or even the intensity. So they might actually potentially even have better outcomes. This was in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
And they looked at 373 patients from 12 intensive care units at five different hospitals between September 2006 and March 2011, randomized the people to either usual care, having this music with preferred music tailored by a music therapist, or use of noise-canceling headphones if the patient asked for that.
And those who had this tailored music listened to the music for about an hour, a little less than an hour and a half a day, versus those who had the noise-canceling headphones wore them for about 34 minutes a day. And those who had this tailored music on board actually had significantly reduced anxiety scores, which I think is very interesting.
I think it is too. And, you know, there's a variety of research out there about the value of music therapy. And in this case, in a time when people may be very scared and uncomfortable, having the soothing sounds of something that's comfortable to them, their type of music, it's really positive, I think, that can make a difference to lower anxiety.
What would you listen to, Christy? Now, we don't want you ever being that sick, but if you were in that type of situation, what type of music would you listen to?
I would listen to a Hillsong and a certain type of soothing Christian music.
And I think I would spiritual. Have a little jazz on the way, a spiritual type of jazz, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't want to ever be in that situation, and hope our loved ones and your loved ones are never in that situation. But I do think this raises potential changes to how care should be given, that more options for bringing in common sense, no real side effects, other than if I had to listen to rap music, I think I might
that would be
get
terrible.
Right off the respirator. But for most people, listening to what they would like to listen to.
Well, let's talk about fighting asthma with ginger. This is an interesting question of whether or not ginger or different components of ginger can make a difference in tissue of the lung and how it reacts in the setting of asthma.
Yes, there's some research that ginger has long known anti-inflammation type effects. And this research that was reported, presented in front of the American Thoracic Society, had researchers at Columbia University have three different types of compounds which they mixed together. One had a lung opening compound that was mixed with one type of ginger, and the other two were two different formulations. So all of them had a lung opening compound, but three different types of ginger, and then one that didn't have any ginger, to see what type of response the ginger added on top of the drug.
They found that the tissues that were treated with this combination of ginger components had more relaxation than those who were not, or who were treated with another component. And then within the ginger components, there was a little more relaxing effect of the tissue with a certain type of ginger. So to me, this is important, but not totally ready for prime time, in that it was tested on the tissue and not on real people and the way lungs are acting in real life, but shows a lot of promise that it could have some potential.
Yeah, I don't think we can go out there, and particularly we don't want people inhaling ginger. We already had this problem with inhaling cinnamon and that kind of problem that we saw with the impact on children and so forth. And I think if you inhaled this without a purified form in the mixture that they're talking about, it could be a real problem as an irritant. But this is something to look out for. And maybe if you were taking ginger on a regular basis, or ginger tablets or some other ginger in your diet, maybe if you're asthmatic, maybe something to think about.
Yeah, I wouldn't start it, but if you are, it's probably fine. And stay tuned.
Ginger tastes good, though.
It does taste good.
It tastes good.
It settles your stomach, too.
Speaking of taste, let's talk about this very last, next research that matters, though, about hysterectomies and heart disease.
Okay, so there's been concern over the years that women who have a hysterectomy, either with or without taking out the ovaries, could have some relationship to their risk of heart disease.
And this article that was in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology looked at 3,300 premenopausal women who had not yet had menopause, between ages 42 and 52, and followed them for 11 years. To see what would happen with those who were going to eventually have hysterectomy and heart disease.
And they basically found that the women who had a hysterectomy with or without taking out the ovaries did not increase their risk of getting heart disease compared with women who reached menopause naturally. And so at least according to this, looking at this information of 3,300 women, that's a pretty good size. There was not a difference. So
we're probably not going to get more research on this particular question. So I think you base it on what you know, and this sounds like it's probably safe, at least for the heart disease risk factor. You don't have to worry about that. That's good news.
I think it is too. Let's talk about breastfeeding and formula. So there's a lot of information and a lot of support for breastfeeding these days, understanding that breast milk is the best thing for a baby in terms of a lot of different outcomes and protecting them from infections. But yet, it's hard.
This article raises a whole can of worms, I think, because what I was taught coming through, and I'm sure, Christy, you as well, is we want to make sure, for those who are breastfeeding, and we are encouraging that, we want to make sure that they have access to breast milk. And we really don't want to introduce formula because the belief that it might inhibit people from breastfeeding. But this research challenged that assumption. And this was in the journal Pediatrics, a very well-respected journal.
And so what they did, this was really about the question of, if you provide a newborn a small amount of formula for the first days after birth or in those first few months, if they're having trouble with supply, will that then impact a woman's desire and ability to continue?
And they followed 40 full-term infants, all of whom had initially lost a little bit of their body weight, as sometimes happens with a breastfed child. One-third got an ounce of formula before breastfeeding, or to remain breastfeeding exclusively for 2 to 5 days.
And what they found was that after 3 months, 79% of the babies, almost 80% who received that little bit of formula, were still breastfeeding, compared to only 42% who did not receive the formula during that time. And so to me, I mean, this really suggests that, well, for one, we all know formula is not poison. It's a good source of nutrition. And in this case, it looks like by supporting the baby and that family during a time of transition, that might actually help empower women to continue breastfeeding versus sort of give up. Okay, that concludes the Research That Matters portion of our show. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Mark Gwynn, director of the UNC Family Medicine Center, about wellness at work. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Today on Conversations, Christy, we're going to be talking with Dr. Mark Gwynn, director of the University of North Carolina Family Medicine Center and medical director for the UNC Wellness at Work, about this whole concept of wellness at work. Welcome to Your Health, Dr. Gwynn.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Christy.
We're glad to have you with us and would love to hear. I know you've had a rich history as a family physician and in leadership, but how was it that wellness at work became something that you're passionate about?
So that's a very good question. I think that the process started about 5 years ago, and particularly with the town of Chapel Hill. And our Wellness at Work program primarily is working with the town of Chapel Hill and their employees right now. And the idea came about because they were seeing their costs for healthcare rise dramatically, over 10% per year for a 4 to 5 year stretch. And they were looking for ways to reduce their cost. And there was a natural partnership with the town of Chapel Hill and UNC Healthcare, and particularly UNC Family Medicine. And as we started to get involved with this, we realized how important and robust an experience could be had at the worksite. So we know that employees spend more time at work than they do at home. And very little had been done before about 10 years ago about worksite wellness.
So let's take one step huge back, which is this whole idea that your worksite is a place where healthcare can be delivered. Because I think traditionally we think about, you know, yes, you do have maybe in these large companies that you might have a physician on staff or a clinic on staff, but the great majority of work sites around the country are smaller work sites. Is this something new and different that we're thinking about now, how healthcare is delivered where you work rather than outside of work where you go to see your doctor?
Adam, it's a good point. I think it's very new, and you're right. Large companies like IBM and SAS have developed some worksite healthcare programs that have been fairly successful. But nationally, this idea of healthcare delivery systems like UNC Healthcare, employers, and even payers, health insurance companies, talking about worksite wellness is new. And really, over the past 3 years, we've seen a dramatic expansion of worksite wellness programs.
Why is that? What's the goal? What's driving this? Is it all of a sudden everyone's interested in, let's just improve the quality of our workforce?
I think employers are really starting to realize that they have to take control of cost, that healthcare is a dramatic and driving force in their increased cost. And I think they're starting to see that things like tobacco use, for instance, something that you're well aware of, if they can really impact health behaviors at work, it can improve their bottom line.
So that I have so many questions, but one that might help our listeners is, what does this look like for an employee? So if I'm an employee and I work for the town of Chapel Hill, I have a physician who I've been following for a period of time. How does this work that now I'm at work, and what does that look like for me?
So there are several different models. What really changes, I think, is having a person, whether that's a nurse practitioner or a nurse or a physician, that an employee can talk to at any point during the day. It involves answering questions about what's called a health risk assessment, questions about health behaviors and chronic disease and medications. It involves having access to a health coach, so someone that you can talk to about your nutrition habits or your ability to exercise or what's motivating you or what barriers do you have to those, to really improving your own health and helping you along the way. for the town of Chapel Hill specifically, there's also a nurse practitioner that's available for what we call minor illness care. So things like colds and infections and injuries, things that employees more normally would go see a doctor for, now they can stay at work and not miss half a day of work. So there's benefit to the employer, but also the employees can stay at work longer.
So I can understand the employee might like this. They're not paying for this, right?
That's correct.
So this is a added benefit for them. Perhaps I could see, we'll talk about what's in it for the employer. You've already mentioned maybe reduced costs. And what about the doctors? Who do the doctors of these patients, employees, who maybe are we taking money away from doctors? Are doctors not going to be happy with this?
That's a good question, too. We thought about that when we first started this program and had some conversations with several local doctors about that specifically. And I think about it in terms of my own experience with my own patients. And this is really an added benefit. How often as a physician would you really like someone outside of your office, in addition to you, talking to your patients about how to control their diabetes and how to control their blood pressure, or better yet, how to take medications? So this is an added benefit. And we've had really good feedback from local physicians about this program.
So what steps, so we as family physicians are well aware of the benefits of continuity relationships with doctors and the better health care that happens if you follow over time with someone versus sort of showing up to random people at different times. How, and I know you believe that and know it. So how have you structured your program to make sure that the communication gets back to the primary doctor and that they're, that is coordinated in a way that benefits the patient?
So most of the town of Chapel Hill employees live in Orange County, Durham County, Burlington, Mebane, et cetera. And so most of their primary care physicians have access to UNC records. And so we've created medical records for the town of Chapel Hill employees, both within the UNC medical record, but also a portal that employees have access to that they can show their primary care provider their data.
Great.
So let's dive right in for a second now. Give me an example of a typical situation that you've encountered an employee that interacts with your program. But give us an example. How's it work?
Certainly. So I think we've had significant success around tobacco use, for instance. So there are a handful, well, more than a handful of employees who use tobacco products. And part of this program includes a tobacco cessation counselor, as well as nicotine replacement products that are free for the employees. So we'll identify an employee who smokes, for instance, can make an appointment with a nicotine dependence counselor and establish an ongoing relationship for however long it takes to remain smoke free. And then their incentives build in, and for this program, financial incentives to remain tobacco free for 6 months and for 12 months. And we've seen marked success in the past year around tobacco cessation. About 50% of the employees who use tobacco products that have engaged in the program have remained smoke-free or tobacco-free for 12 months. That's a huge success story.
And so what kind of financial incentives? So these are flowing from their employer to them in order to help them quit smoking? How does that work?
Absolutely.
It sounds genius because of the benefit to their health.
It is, and this is the commitment that this particular employer has. And what we've seen nationally is without that type of financial commitment from an employer, these programs don't work. So that positive incentive is really powerful for behavior change. And it's a real financial commitment from the employer, for sure.
There's some folks who would say that the employee has to have skin in the game, or that if you're going to do incentives, that if the employee participates, for every $15 they put in, the employer, if they're successful, might give them another 15 or 30 or 40, whatever. Is it structured like that, and why or why not?
There are some models that we've seen recently, especially around weight loss, that mm-hmm. if someone commits some financial commitment, that it improves their engagement with the program. So we, including the Town of Chapel Hill Administration, decided to have positive incentives first, really for engagement. We really wanted people to engage with the HRA and also come in person and see the nurse practitioner in the clinic. We decided not to have negative incentives from the beginning.
Dr. Gwen, this is fascinating, and we're looking forward to continuing the conversation, but we do need to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue talking with our guest, Dr. Mark Gwen, director of the UNC Family Medicine Center, about wellness at work. We'll be right back with Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We've been talking with Dr. Mark Gwen, the medical director of the UNC Family Medicine Center, about wellness at work, and specifically around Dr. Gwen's UNC Wellness at Work program for the town of Chapel Hill. You were talking about some of the successes, Dr. Gwen, with the smoking cessation program and some really positive things that have come from this effort, and mentioned weight loss. I wonder if you'd speak a little more about how that's worked or a particular person that might have affected.
Certainly. One of the lifestyle factors that we're really looking to change is a sedentary lifestyle and nutrition, and really working toward weight loss. And we all know how important that is to help with preventing chronic disease and the outcomes of chronic disease. And a program like this can be really personal and powerful. And I think about a gentleman I just saw 2 weeks ago whose father died in his late 50s. And so he had this idea that he wasn't going to make it past his late 50s, and he was significantly overweight. And after meeting our nurse practitioner and working with her for just 3 months, really set a weight loss goal. And after a year, he lost 70 pounds. His
wow.
blood pressure came down.
70 pounds?
70 pounds.
Wow.
He's off at least one of his blood pressure medications, but probably more importantly, he's now 60, and he's outlived his father and has a very different outlook on life. So this type of personal health coaching is a really powerful tool.
Well, and that is a powerful story, and I know your goals are very ambitious, because I've read some of the background material about not only trying to lower healthcare costs and improve quality, but you want a workforce and your employees want a workforce that's more productive and has lower absenteeism from a healthier workforce. Do you think that that's actually happening for the town of Chapel Hill and for these wellness at work programs across the United States?
So for the town of Chapel Hill, it looks like that is happening. And that's primarily based on stories that we hear from people. The next step is to actually measure that. But when we look nationally, things like nicotine or tobacco cessation directly affects absenteeism. Even simple things like going for a smoke break. If you don't go for a smoke break, you're at work more often. So there's national data that certainly these programs improve productivity for employees, for sure.
And when you think about what's happening, I mean, this is a shift of culture for people to think about their overall wellness, not just separate from their work life, but more of their whole life. How has that been in sort of addressing people's concerns, perhaps, and thinking about a real culture shift?
You know, Christy, this has been the most fascinating piece of this program to me. When we first started, there was skepticism from employees. And quite honestly, that makes sense to me. You have an outside group coming in, looking at your personal health information and wondering whether or not that's going to be shared with their employer. That's a big issue. And so I have to say, we've been very careful and intentional about separating that information. But that skepticism was real and probably understandable. What we've seen over the past year and a half is that culture change that you're talking about. Even things like setting new policy around vending machines, and the food that goes into a vending machine is a policy decision that's being made right now with the town of Chapel Hill. when I have met with people and there's been food, we hear that the employees are bringing different food to meetings.
They don't want you to order pizza for the meetings anymore, huh?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So when we think about culture change, those are the little pieces that we start to see. There's true culture change.
Well, as my grandmother would say, though, let's talk tachos, the Yiddish word meaning let's get down to business, though, Mark. I'm the town of Chapel Hill manager, which I'm not. But, you know, you promised me that we were going to reduce, we were going to make a healthier workforce. You've done that. But the bottom line here is that my premiums have gone up as an employer 10%, 20%, 30% a year for 3 years. What's the bottom line? Is this going to help me reduce my premiums? Because that's, for me as an employer, right, that's one of the bottom lines.
I agree, Adam. It is one of the bottom lines. And the rates of premiums are really pretty complex, and all of the factors that go into that is a pretty complex world. Now, what we saw here in this program with the town of Chapel Hill, or what the town saw, I should say, is a significant increase in premiums for 4 to 5 years, double-digit increases.
Before this program.
Before this program. Now, the year after this program was implemented, they saw a 3% reduction in their premiums. Now, it's not solely due to this program, but this program certainly played a factor.
I think I hear the angels singing up above a little bit, but no, that's impressive. In today's healthcare environment, premiums, I don't know where I've seen them go down very often.
Agreed.
So that's a huge plus. Is this something that this model can do for employers across the Triangle region, across North Carolina, replicated nationally? If I'm an employer out there, I'm thinking I'm contacting Dr. Gwendemar or groups like his to implement these kinds of programs.
Mm-hmm. Employers like RDU Authority have had a robust wellness program for the past 5 years, and they're also starting to see significant shifts in risk of their employers. Of their employees from high risk to moderate risk to low risk. They're really a shift in the risk curve. Now, insurers look at that risk profile. They look at utilization and cost for the previous year and what their potential risk is the next year. And that's the key. And is this replicable? Absolutely. It takes...
What about in maybe more rural counties? A lot of people would think, well, Chapel Hill is healthier probably because of all the, you know, universities and all the resources at our disposal. Do you think, at least from national data and from what you know, that this is replicable in communities that may not have so many resources?
So we tested that. and we've been working with the town of Hillsborough for the past year. And you could argue that the town of Hillsborough is a small rural municipality. So it certainly is replicable. Now, it's a different type of program, and it's a different culture. And to get at your question before, yeah, the program has to adapt to the culture of that community for sure. Hmm. And using local resources is incredibly important. Whole Foods, for instance, locally has been involved with the Town of Chapel Hill program. Kinetics has been a really nice partner locally to help offset the cost of gym membership for Town of Chapel Hill employees. So to use that model and utilize local resources in these small rural areas is the key, I think.
So exercise, weight loss, smoking cessation, blood pressure, it seems like this is, you're trying to pay up front to avoid these expenses down later. But if I'm out there and I'm working at a company, my company's not really offering these programs, they're going to have a leap of faith, right? How do you convince the employer, or if you're someone who works there, what tools do you think they can take to their bosses, their owners, to try to get them to take on a program like this? Because it's a win for the employees, clearly.
I would argue it's a win for the employer and the employees. That's an interesting question, Adam. I actually do think that this type of program, for it to be successful, has to come from leadership. There has to be leadership buy-in and, quite honestly, public leadership talking about successes, talking about their investment in the people as their primary resource. So I think there are many different tools that can be used, but this really does have to come from the leadership of the employers.
So where can people find out more information about the Wellness at Work program here in the town of Chapel Hill? Is there a resource or a website or somewhere they can get more information?
Certainly. We have a website called uncwellnessatwork.org. So uncwellnessatwork.org. And you can visit aspects of the Chapel Hill Wellness at Work program as well as the Hillsborough Wellness at Work program.
We are certainly very, very thrilled and proud of you for the great work that you're doing for the town of Chapel Hill and now Hillsborough. And Lambie, we'll have you back in a few years to talk about how it's really changed the health of our state.
Thank you, Dr. Gwynn, so much for being our guest today.
Thank you. This was fun.
Coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We'll be right back.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health continues now.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the House Call segment of our show today, Adam and I will spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and your concerns.
If you have a question or a comment you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming show, please send it to yourhealth@unc.edu. And Christy, we have some excellent house calls today about diabetes and too many medications, perhaps.
About thyroid nodules.
About arthritis and what can we do about it.
And about hormone replacements and over-the-counter medications for those symptoms.
And we're going to ask our assistant producer, Erica Lloyd, to read us our very first house call today.
My mom has diabetes and takes 3 medications by mouth. Her diabetes is not even that well controlled. Recently, her doctor said he wanted to stop 2 of the medications and put her on Lantus insulin. Is that a good idea?
Is that a good idea? Well, it's definitely an idea, and it might be good, but is it a good idea?
Well, I think, this is a pretty common scenario where some people with type 2 diabetes are able to control it over time with the by-mouth medications. But once you get up to multiple medications and over time, sometimes they're not doing enough and insulin is the right decision. And in that case, it might be able to reduce your mom's number of medications to something called Lantus, which is a long-acting insulin that can help with diabetes.
Yeah, I found in my practice, Christy, I'd be curious about yours, but once we get up to 3 medications for particularly like diabetes, oral medications, and we're not controlled, mm-hmm. then we should rethink our therapy. And because the amount of side effects you get, and can you imagine going to 4 oral medications for diabetes, the side effects would be very large and still maybe not work. So the goal is to control your diabetes.
Absolutely. And, provided that the teaching that your mom is able to give the injection or that there's someone around who could help with that injection and that the teaching is done well, then this could be a really safe way to do it and it may work better.
So we kind of like it and we kind of think you maybe should talk with your doctor about it.
Thanks for
your question.
Let's do our next house call.
I got an MRI recently of my neck because of arthritis. They told me that I also have a thyroid nodule. My family doctor got a thyroid scan, and they said it was a hot nodule and that I needed a biopsy. Is this likely to be cancer?
Oh, I relate to this. This is one of those, what sometimes we call them incidental nomas, where you just find something you didn't expect it. You went in for arthritis, and they found something else, and all of a sudden you got to get worried. And in this case, this is a lot of times how thyroid nodules are found.
Right, and they're within thyroid nodules. Sometimes they're called cold nodules or hot nodules, and hot sounds bad. But in fact, I remember learning this in medical school, having to sort of think this is the one that's backwards. We're hot. The hot nodules usually are not cancer, but I think getting it biopsied is a fine thing to do just so that you can be sure.
Yeah, it's not likely to be cancer, but it's likely that you're going to get a biopsy here, and it probably will be an incidentaloma. I did that better that time.
Incidentaloma. That's what it's called.
Well,
anyway,
whatever it's going to be, we hope
talk.
It's going to be not serious and probably won't be. We know, though, it will be of concern to you. We hope you're doing well. Thank you for that house call. Let's listen to our next house call from Erica.
I am 81 and have severe arthritis of my back. It looks like an ant colony, I'm told. I cannot take ibuprofen or aspirin because of my stomach. I tried physical therapy and exercise, and it does not help much. I tried a friend's Percocet, one tablet, and it gave me a really good relief for 8 hours. Is it safe for me to take one or two of these a day and ask my doctor for a prescription?
You know, this is a good question. Is it safe, and should you ask your doctor for a prescription? And, you know, if you feel like you have done physical therapy, exercise, and all of these things, the medications that are like Percocet, these opioid medicines, are strong and do have risks, especially as you get older, to making you confused or dizzy or fall. But on the other hand, if a small dose is what it takes to live, then I certainly think you should ask your doctor about it and talk about the pros and cons. What's your thought, Adam?
I kind of agree with you on this one, Christy. It's one of those ones where doctors don't talk about it that much because the guidelines will tell us we should never put an older patient on these types of medicines. But it's kind of like thinking, well, aspirin and anti-inflammatory medications like ibuprofen aren't necessarily really safe in an 81-year-old either.
That's true.
So I think if you're being followed closely, your quality of life is better. You're not having side effects. Not so bad.
Yeah, definitely have that conversation with your doctor and just bring it up. If you don't ask and talk about it, then you won't know.
There you go. Well, let's listen to our very last house call.
If a woman is afraid of hormonal replacements, are there OTC medications that can be as responsive as prescription meds?
Wow, that is a... that's a tough question that we hear a lot, and I feel for you, and I'm not looking forward to that phase of life of going through just all of the what seems for a lot of people to be a very difficult time of suffering from hot flashes and other symptoms of menopause.
And this is one of those questions that Christy and I, we went back and reread some literature again because we wanted to make sure that we really were giving you up-to-date information here. And we would love to be able to say to you that, you know, you can just take one of these isoflavonoids, you can take red clover, you can take black cohosh, and that with confidence it will work just as well as some of the prescription medicines with less side effects and lower costs. But can we say it, Christy?
No, unfortunately, we can't. Whether it's the soy products of phytoestrogens that you hear, or black cohosh, or all of these things, acupuncture. At this point, there's really no studies that support fully that these things are helpful. And in some cases, there's possible harms. And for most of them, there might be a couple small studies showing promise, but then when they look at it all together, you might be spending money without benefit.
And it's not like there hasn't been some research. A lot of these have been studied before. That doesn't mean there can't be more research. But for instance, flaxseed oil, there was a randomized controlled trial of 200 women, and it didn't find a benefit. So the things that do work, there are some prescription medications. Yes, they do have some side effects, but there are several different classes you could talk with your doctor about.
And those would include, there's a certain type of blood pressure medications that can help. Certain kind of depression medicine, those SSRIs, can be beneficial to reduce hot flashes, and some other options. And, you know, you really need to weigh that out carefully with your doctor, depending on how horrible the hot flashes are for you.
Hope they get better. Thank you for your question, and thank everyone for their questions today. We want to thank you for joining us today at for Your Health. We hope we've addressed issues and concerns that are important to you, and you can send us your own comments at yourhealth@unc.edu.
You can also visit us online at yourhealthradio.org. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes. Get our health app by searching Your Health, one word, for a free download on iTunes.
We'd like to thank WCHL and the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship, and our guest today, Dr. Mark Nguyen. We hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
We look forward to talking with you again next week. Take care.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, presented by UNC Family Medicine. You can find this or any other episode of Your Health at WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.